It's really, really important, I think, is to understand how important it is to feel good in yourself. And that happens when you're just not toxic. It's the only way to say it.
Welcome to Forever Young, the health and well-being podcast from Lanzerhof. My name is Mario Pedizzoli, and in every episode, join me in conversation with a variety of health experts and special guests as we explore what it means to live well. We may not find the secret to eternal youth, but join me on our quest as we explore just what it means to live a balanced, healthy, and happy life. Hello again and welcome. So far in Forever Young, we have been in conversation with a great number of health and medical experts in their field, with topics ranging from fasting to cryotherapy, from vitamin infusions to mental health. Now, along the way, we will also speak to those who have committed to making healthier choices in order to improve their own quality of life, effectively taking control of their own well-being. So how do they feel as a result? How has their body thanked them? And what have they learned about themselves? Well, one such person is my very special guest today, who I am very excited to introduce. She is simply one of the UK's finest and most respected female singers, with a career full of top 10 hits and a voice with incredible range, power, and pure soul. And if that's not enough, she's also an accomplished actress on the West End stage and our TV screens, a TV presenter and radio host. She's cringing here. The list goes on. It's a stellar career that was recognized last year with an MBE for services to music, entertainment, and charity. Well, I think I've embarrassed her enough. Welcome to the show, Misha Paris.
Hi, Mario. It's so nice to be here. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, pleasure's mine. How are you today?
Well, I've just had an amazing workout with Eduardo and I feel fantastic. I mean, the thing is, it's when you have that attention to detail with someone who knows your body and knows what your body needs without you having to say anything, it's just great. And I come out of that session, even though I'm completely exhausted before I get there, I'm energized after. So look, I'm really good.
I can see. And actually, on a health and well-being podcast, I think you've proved the point, you know, having finished a gym workout. And it's nice to give Eduardo a name check. I know you enjoy training
with him. He's great.
So let's see where this talk takes us. But, you know, we're going to be looking at your lifestyle and your approach to keeping fit and well. And obviously, that will overlap, I'm sure, into your career as well. But just even from our introduction, it's fair to say you're one of life's busy people. So, yes. How has your relationship with health and fitness changed over time?
Oh, that's a good question. It's really changed. Because before, how it was, I used to always just try and like stay fit before an album cover shoot. When I knew I had an album cover shoot to do, I probably wouldn't eat for like 4 days and just coffee. And, you know, that's what I did. And, you know, that's when you're young and silly. And then as you get older, that's not going to work. So basically what started to happen, especially when I started doing theatre, but I started doing theatre about 20 years ago because my career is like 34 years now, but theatre was about 20. And that's 8 shows a week. So the minute I started, it's punishing. And then you've got 2 shows on a Wednesday and 2, you know, the matinees, right? So there's just no way that no eating for a few days is going to cut it.
Right? If anything, that's going to make it worse.
It's a nightmare. But, yeah. So what I started to do in the daytime when you don't have a show, I started to make sure that I was training in the daytime so that by the evening I was ready for the show. And that's kind of like where it sort of kicked off. It was like 20 odd years ago, I definitely just changed my whole routine because it wasn't working. It's okay with an album. When you make an album, right, you look great for the album shoot and you look fantastic and then you can chill out a little bit afterwards and then you didn't get fit again because you got the tour, right?
But you've
got
cyclical,
those...
It's cyclical.
And then you've got like these moments in between, you know, a couple of months you can chill in between.
Yeah.
But honey, when it's a theatre, there's none of that.
No.
It's just every day you've got to be on it.
Did someone coach you on that or did you work that out for yourself?
Well, it was hard work. It was the first month I was in the show, suddenly I was knackered. My voice was exhausted. And I basically worked out that I had a trainer, you know, who would come in and I noticed every time I ran with him, my voice was on fire. Like, I mean, you know, my voice is always there, but it was tired. before I started running before a show. Mm. So then I started to realize every time I run before a show, my voice is on fire. So I was like, I need to always do this. And that's what I've done. So all these years, that's amazing. Literally what I do. I always train before a show.
And it puts you in a good mood.
It really puts you. And well, you know what it is? You can internalize so much stress in your mind. And if you haven't got something to just burn it out, which is running, just training and pushing your body, it takes all of that internal pressure out. And that's why I love it. So, you know, even if I'm angry with, I don't know, someone, an accountant or somebody, it's usually an accountant, isn't it? And, you know.
Apologies to accountants.
Yeah, love you everywhere.
Today.
God bless you. But they're not my accountants, so that's something else. Fair enough. You know, when I'm angry with them or a lawyer or something, it's something, some business. It's usually business. Something frustrates you. You know, the minute I go in the gym, I'm literally on that treadmill and I'm thinking about that person that's driving me nuts. By the time I'm finished, it's gone. Totally gone.
Yes.
It's over.
Now, I think a lot of us can relate to that, the feel-good factor of exercise and the mental benefits that come with it as well.
Yeah, and also, you know, the sleep as well. Mm. I'm never really a good sleeper. I literally, 5 hours, I'm good, you know? Mm. And when you work out, you relax more.
Yeah.
Because your body wants to relax.
Yes.
Because you've taken that stress off, which is good. So there's lots of benefits. It's not just for the show. It's also the emotional factor, the feeling, the stress thing in work can be very taxing when you've got lots of things going on. For me, I have multiple careers at the same time.
Yeah.
And that is a juggling thing. So if I don't have chill time in between workout, chill time, I can't juggle all those things.
Getting that balance. You can do it and stress it can be good, but you've got to get the balance.
You really have to get it right. Yes. And, you know, also you do have to have a little team. And I do have a little team as well.
That's the only way, I'm sure. You need a team, a support network around you.
Yeah, just to keep it, you know, just to make sure the diary works, because you know what I'm like. I'll be putting dates in and then she's like, no, Mish, you've got that on today. Didn't you realise? sorry. So, you know, so I do have a little team, but definitely I'm a very bubbly person by nature.
Yes.
But, you know, I'm human, you know, so I get those days when I feel really overwhelmed or, you know, my daughter didn't take the dog out for a walk and I was at work crying out loud, the poor dog can't walk himself, you know. You get those days when it's all going off.
Oh.
And so when, you know, the training just keeps you chilled and calm, nothing is that bad for some reason. I don't know. It's
well, as you said, your career is 34 years and counting.
So long.
There's another way of putting it, Misha. It's you're in your fifth decade. Sorry.
that's
amazing. But that's also to be celebrated, isn't it?
It should,
because of
true.
Course.
Yeah, I'm very grateful. I'm grateful that people are still interested, Mario. Honestly, I'm like, you still like what I do? This is great.
But you keep kind of not reinventing yourself, but evolving, I think is probably the right
Yeah, I think, and I think, you know, it's quite funny because when I look back at in the early days when I used to train and how even that's changed, the way that people train you now is different. Everything is evolved now. It's not like, you know, like before you would think, oh no, I've got to go and see the trainer now. Oh no. It's a whole different thing now. And I try to tell that to people who say to me, you work out and go to the gym with the trainer, are you nuts? And I'm like, no, honestly, it's not what it used to be. You know, it was a nightmare, wasn't it? It was a chore. It felt like heavy. But there's a whole new way that they train you now. There's a whole, you know, this is why I'm saying it's different. Everything has evolved, not just me. So I can sort of fit all these new things into my lifestyle, basically because I'm open to it. And this is the same with my career. I'm open to trying new things. I always say, if I really make a boo-boo of it, you know, I'll never do it again, like strictly.
But you won't know until you try.
Strictly. I'll, never again will I do Strictly Come Dancing. It's a great show to watch, and I thought, oh, this could be quite interesting. I always like this kind of show. I'll be fine on it. I was absolutely dreadful. And my dad called me up and he said, you know, Misha, you've got a fantastic voice, but don't dance. That's how bad it was. I got kicked out, the second person out.
Parents tell it to you straight, don't they?
I'm telling you, there's no love there, you know? It's just like, bam. But there was a little compliment in there. It was in there, a little bit.
Yeah.
But I was focused on the other one. Yeah.
Well, at least you did it. And now you know. And now you can talk about it. Well, what works for you? And
Yeah. What advice would you give to our listeners in terms of your approach to health and well-being and so on? So, well, let's start with exercise. You've covered a lot of that, but what do you really look forward to doing, and what do you think gives you maximum benefit?
You know, I think it's really a thing like this. I think about 5 years ago, I became more intensely involved in looking after myself. It's when you see the results in the way that you feel and the way that you look. That's what makes you go. Because, you know, you do get that point. You get to that point where you're training and you just started and it's like 3 months in and you're kind of like, I can't see any benefits. This is rubbish. I don't want to do this. You get like that. But if you just keep at it, seriously, 7-8 months down the road, you look at yourself before and after and you go, oh my gosh, it's actually working.
And that's its own motivation, isn't it?
Isn't it crazy? And then you look at your old pictures and go, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And also how you feel. You don't blow your fuse so much. You don't, things don't annoy you as much. For some reason, like everything feels like, yeah, it's going to be all right. All right, it's a bit rocky today, but you come out the gym and you're like, yeah, rocky. Da-da-da. It's great. Yeah. So it's really good. I say for getting older, you can either do two things. You know, you can get really down about getting older, or you can really just take hold of it and go,
Embrace it, actually.
Yeah, I am not getting older, because that's not what older means. Older means I know more. No one can make fun of me or do stuff that makes me upset. I'm in control of this, and this is fun. Yeah.
What a fantastic, perfect attitude to can totally.
It's you, babe. It's because I come here. Yeah.
So let's talk about, I mean, exercise is one thing, but your nutritional intake and how you eat. Did you make any conscious choices there? Any changes?
Well, I got a nutritionalist about 15 years ago. And she was really good, you know. And I've never been able to locate her again. She was assigned to me for about a week. And she came into my house, and I never forget it. She walked into my kitchen. I thought I was quite healthy, do you know? And she literally opened the cupboards and threw everything in the bin. No. Sugar. Wheat, flour. And I stood there going, you know. But she worked with me for that week, and I've never left it. And I've kept the same thing going. So what I do is I always have a shake. Spirulina shake. I have that like every day. I have a liter of that a day in a water bottle. I make my own sort of like shake. And that spirulina, I have that. And I don't have flour. You see, flour stuff, I kind of stay away from flour. It just makes you want to go to bed, you know? But what I find is I, because of this wonderful woman 15 years ago, taught me that if you just replace it with like massive broccoli and lots of greens and a massive piece of fish, that's how I eat. I literally have like a massive piece of like fish on a bed of like broccoli, monchetu and all of that.
Yes.
And that's my life.
Very healthy.
I love that. And then soup is really good as well. So when you get a bit hungry, sometimes you can have soup instead of like going for it. And do you know, you just find if you just eat like that, you can eat as many times in the day when you eat like that.
Yes.
That's what's crazy. You can eat loads because it's not... It's nutritionally good for you without all the heavy, like, useless carbs that you don't need. It's the right carbs, you know? So I eat like that, really, and I have, like, yogurt and oats in the morning. That's my go-to. Oats in the morning. I love oats. Oats is really good for when you're aging as well.
Slowly release energy throughout the day.
I'm telling you, honey, that blood sugar thing, it really works. It keeps it balanced. And so in the morning, I'll have my oats in the morning, and in the evening, I have my... You know, my plate of fish. It's not a small piece of fish, it's massive. Do you know what I mean? It's huge. And I have that with my greens and I'm good. Because I found that with this lady, what she taught me was that when you have a high protein intake, you know, you're fuller for longer. This is what I learned. And it's so true. So when you have more protein as opposed to everything else, you find that you don't eat as much. It's crazy.
So it's perseverance and then developing these great habits.
Yeah, and I literally, well, I got to tell you, you know, when she threw everything out the cupboard, I literally had like, I felt unwell for a few weeks because I gave up sugar. And I literally felt like I was getting ill because I was so used to sugar. It's crazy. You can get really used to sugar, you know, and it's in everything. So I remember there was this withdrawal. I felt like I was going to die. But she's great. She's I can't credit myself. It was this fantastic lady that taught me all that.
Who you've never seen since?
Never seen since. And she was a, she
Can
did,
you give her a name check?
I don't even remember her name.
So whoever
like
you are.
15 years ago. She was a lovely blonde lady. So lovely.
There we are. If you're listening.
Her name. Bless her. But she was so good. And, you know, she taught me, you know, the right foods to eat. And it's not that you can have, you know, instead of white flour bread, you know, I changed it to rye. You know, these are the things you can just make these little adjustments. You know, oil, try not to cook with oil. It's good to have the dressing, but not make it.
But all of these small changes just, all together.
It works, you know. And then also every time I work out, I take quite a lot of supplements. You know, I take a lot of like, you know, cod liver oil and magnesium is very, very important when you get older. Trust me, it's the one because you don't get aches and pains. It's fabulous. And then, you know, steams. Steams are my life. That is my life.
Really?
I love steams. It's cool. Like, well, it just keeps everything fresh in the skin. It's quite interesting because I was reading something in the Times the other day about Cindy Crawford, who's probably one of the most beautiful women in the world. And she said exactly what I say. She lives by the steam. Her steaming is her life. And she looks fabulous.
Fantastic. Come on, this all sounds too good to be true. Do you have any guilty pleasures?
Me? Yeah, I do. I like a little bit of chocolate. Okay. But it can only be one chocolate, which is Lindt. That's it.
Ah, very good choice.
I won't go anywhere. There's no other. Well, you know, I have a little bit of an allergy, you know, because I am allergic to dark chocolate. I'm allergic to peanuts. So I can only have that milk chocolate Lindt. That's the only chocolate that I can have that doesn't make me feel sick.
Okay. What about alcohol?
No, I gave that up. I was a big drinker. And Mario, you know I was. I loved my drink, okay? That was it. Was it Provence? Anything Provence, I was all over it. And it was just, love it. You know, I just think that it could have been lockdown that did it. Could have been.
Basically, how long have you been off alcohol?
September.
Okay.
Till now. What is that?
Is that eight months now?
And you know, it's so bizarre. Well, you know what happened? The first lockdown, I literally went nuts. I was drinking, and I never drank at home. For some reason, I was ordering crates of this Provence something from the south of France. I was killing it. And then my daughter turned around, my teenager, the young one, and she said, "Mum, you never drink like this. What's going on? You're drinking a bit more, Mum, than you normally do." And I'm like, "Yeah, I am, aren't I? It's a bit weird." And then I kind of saw that and I thought, that's not good. And then the lockdown stopped, didn't it?
Yes.
And then when the second lockdown came in, that's when I was like, I'm done. I can't do that again. I think it was the initial shock of lockdown. I think I've met a few people since who've given up as well since then. It's quite interesting. This lockdown has done a few things to people.
That must have taken a lot of willpower and discipline.
Yeah, well, you know what it is? I think drink, I say, is a creeper. It's a creeper. Suddenly, you're doing it all the time, but you don't realize it because in my game, entertainment, everything is lunch. You go out for lunch, you go out for dinner, you go. And the first thing, what do you want to drink? That's the first thing that happens.
Sure.
And suddenly, you're doing it all the time. But for some reason, lockdown was worse because you didn't go out.
No.
So suddenly it was all in.
And it
was too easy. And then I saw myself getting into a pattern and I suddenly thought, my gosh, I never thought that I drank this much, but maybe I do, but didn't realize it. And then I said, she's got to go.
Well, actually, you know, talking about all that in your career, you know, was there ever a period in your life that, other than lockdown when you look back on and you think, oh dear, that lifestyle was not okay?
Well, you know, the thing is,
my
business is horrendous. I was saying to someone the other day, for me, my only problem was always loving, because I love to party. But party for me is not drugs. Me in a party is a glass of drink in my hand. I'm on the table dancing to the music. That's me, you know. I've never been a drug person. It's not my thing. But it's everywhere in my business. And so when I was in the industry, I think a lot of people thought I was on it because that's just naturally what I'm like.
Yes. Yeah.
But I never wanted that because I think I saw so much of it growing up with people in my family and, you know, who had problems with all that stuff. And I really wanted to prove to my grandparents who brought me up, you know, and they were a massive part of my life, that they had this vision when I asked them to sign my first contract when I was 17, because I couldn't sign it without them. I was too young. I needed them to sign it for me. And they said, we don't want to sign it because we know this music business is dangerous. Mm. And I promised them, and I said, I'm going to prove to you that I'm going to be in this business and I will never become a drug addict. I promise you that. And I stuck to it because they were such amazing people.
Yes.
And that's why my last album, Gospel, was dedicated to them.
I saw. Yeah. And they effectively brought you up.
Yeah, the whole time. My mum and dad are party people, yeah. And they're great. And we saw them at the weekends, but Grandma and Grandpa were ministers, and so I was raised in a very, very strict upbringing, you know, and I loved it. At the time, you know, it was always music and Jesus. That was my whole life. But, you know, believe it or not, that kept me straight in the music industry.
Well, it's true. You were only a teenager when, you know, your first hit, My One Temptation.
Yeah, I mean,
that was an international, global hit, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But going from the church to this international superstardom, I mean, how did you cope? It sounds like your grandparents, you have a lot to thank them for, I
guess. They were great, but, you know, you can't really, to be straight, you can't prepare yourself for that. I mean, like, I was literally just talking to an interviewer yesterday about that, because, you know, one minute you're normal, Misha, going to church, and you know your people who all know you in the church scene, suddenly I'm walking down the street going to the shop and I've got the whole street running after me. And everywhere I look, I'm everywhere. My pictures of me everywhere. I'm on every screen. And it was really surreal. It felt like, do you know the way I describe it? It felt like, you know, like a hurricane and you're in the middle of it and you're just sat there. There's that quiet place. Mm. And that's what it felt like. I was in that quiet place and everything around me
was going. Did you feel quite lonely actually at times?
Totally lonely. That's why I got married so young. I mean, a lot of people always say that. They go, why, like Adele or Spice Girls, why did I get married so young? You know why? Because you live life so much quicker. You know, I did, in 5 years of my career, from the time I was 17 to 20, 21, I had lived in America, had my own apartment at 18, by myself, toured the States, David Letterman, every major show over there. I was all over the place, Canada, Russia, you know, because in those days there weren't internet. So you had to physically travel. Go there. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's really lonely. And I had my manager would sometimes fly out and hang out with me. And in the end, I just flew my mum out. I couldn't take it. I was like, you got to come over now. I can't take it. So it was tough, babe. It was tough.
So looking back on all of that, I mean, did any of it ever go to your head? I mean, you're a teenager,
yeah,
you know, we're all impressionable.
I just have to tell you, I've got to give you a story about that, because you're going to laugh. So one day, right, I'd just done Top of the Pops, which is like the biggest TV show here at that time. And I came and my mum rang up and she was like, we've got some people coming over to the house to visit. You know, make sure you come for dinner. And, you know, because they were all treating me the same, basically, even though I was this big superstar now. And I went down to my mum down in Streatham, where she lives, in her beautiful house. And I walked in there and I sat down. Everything was cool. And then my mum said, they're going to be here in a minute. And but there's another cousin that wants you to go and visit her and we have dinner. And I said, well, I can't because I'm public property now. Oh, my gosh. Who told me to say that? I had the whole family. They all came down on me. Who do you think you are? You know, just because you're on the telly, don't mean that you did it. Babe, it was great. It was brilliant. Because, yeah, and I suddenly was like, check, get back in place, sit down. Nah, won't be doing any of that.
Kept you humble and
grounded.
Kept
me humble, yeah. But that was one episode that never happened again. Trust me.
Yes.
You don't have to tell me twice.
You don't have to tell me twice.
Listen, that chicken, rice and peas, baby, it's not enough. I can't. Yeah, I need that in my life. So if I ever get out of line, I don't get it. You get all inside.
having achieved everything that you've achieved and you look back on your 18-year-old self, what advice would you give that person today?
Do you know, because I'm a person, I just don't look back. That's probably one of my biggest problems. I never look back. I'm always going forward. And sometimes you do need to look back, you know. Sometimes you do need to just go, hang on. you've done all right, you know, Mish, you've done a few. And I don't really have a lot of those moments because I'm too busy going forward. But if I was to look back on my 18-year-old self, I would. There's only one thing I would say. Don't trust anyone in this business. Because I was so green. I just, because everybody's your mate and you buy it.
For you know, a reason.
But you can't see that. You're just so, and I came out the church, I was even more green. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
It was just like, everyone's so nice. And then suddenly, oh, someone's just decided to nick your this or take your this or taken 25% off something or...
So along the way, you learned the hard way, would
really
you say?
Really learned the hard way. Mm. And, you know, the most important thing is what I say to everyone is, you know, it's bumps and bruises.
Mm.
But you just don't get bitter, get better. It's really important that, because you, if you allow that bitterness to set, yeah, it's true, because I was, you know, in the beginning of my career, I was with everyone. I was hanging with people like Prince, Natalie Cole, Chaka Khan, and all these were my friends.
I mean, this was crazy, you know? Because
yeah,
you're right. I mean, that really demonstrates just how much your life changed.
You know, yeah, like overnight.
I think it was, and then it carried on, because your second album,
Contribution yeah.
There was one track written for you by Prince.
That's right. If I Love You Tonight.
And
yeah. That was great.
Rakim, Eric B. and Rakim.
Yeah. He's lovely. He's such a nice boy. Yeah.
You were barely in your 20s.
Yeah.
That's just unbelievable. Looking
nuts.
Back on all
no,
of that.
No, it's crazy. It's nuts. But I was one of these kind of I'm still the same. I was a precocious sort of teenager. I was like, you know, I was in a studio in New York making this album that I wasn't supposed to make, because the record company wanted me to make the same album I made first.
Mm.
You know, but you know me, typical. I want to make a different album now. I know, that was that. That's great. My One Temptation is good, but now we're going to do a different thing now. And they were like, no, don't. You've got to do the same thing again. And so I went against the grain. But I'm in New York. I'm at Unique Studio recording my second album. And I walk past this door and I see Rakim in there. And I'm just like, and that was when Paid in Full was,
yes,
you know, that,
massive.
It was huge. And I, you know me, I just couldn't help myself. I was just knocked the door. I just think you're so great. I really love you. I love that song as well. And he goes, oh, thanks. I just saw you on BET, you know, because BET is like a huge TV show over there. And I said, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I goes, I've always wanted to work with you. And he goes, well, I'd love to work with you. And that was it. And literally, I just gave him the track. He got a little piece of paper, literally, like tore it out of a book and just wrote it there and just put it down.
Amazing. You made that happen.
How could you not? It's Rakim. He's there, you know?
I know.
I mean, you could have said get out, but I was willing to take a risk.
And, you know, you're just still growing up, just in the public. But to make that happen is amazing.
Because when you're young, you don't have any fear.
Mm.
You know what I mean? All I was like, oh my gosh, it's Rakim. Got to have him now. I was like that, you know? Looking back, if it happened now, I would just walk past. I wouldn't go near him. Do you know what I mean?
And Prince?
Prince was different, because I went to his after show party and... the record hadn't even come out yet. It was literally about to come out in a couple of months. And I got the golden ticket, the after show. Took my best mate, went down there. It was packed. Everyone was there. Ronnie Wood, Mickey Rourke, you just name it. Eurythmics, everyone was in the room. But I didn't even, it's funny, I wasn't even looking at them. All I was obsessed with was Prince, you know, because I'd bought all his records. I used to hide them under the bed because my grandparents weren't having it, you know. So I used to hide them. So now he's there, you know, and I'm like, oh my gosh, he's here. And I'm looking at him and he's playing Purple Rain and we're all like, tears are in our eyes and we're all losing it. And then suddenly he stops and he goes, don't you sing? So I look behind me thinking, oh, he's talking to somebody else. Don't you sing? And I went,
sometimes.
And then he started playing Just My Imagination.
Oh, wow.
And you know, we all know that song, right?
Yes.
For some reason, couldn't remember the words. So what? I was nervous. That's why I was terrified. And then I just sang, it was just, and then I held the note. So I went, it was just, and then I held it like Bill Withers.
Not like Bill Withers.
Forever. And he went nuts. Guitar was going off, and then Ronnie jumped in, and Ronnie started playing the guitar, and everyone went mental. And that's really how we met. And then the next day he called up and said, can I join his band? And I said, I'd love to join the band, but I can't because I've just signed this deal and I'm just about to put out my record. And then he said, well, you know, I'd love to work with you. You remind me of Chaka, he said. And I was just so flattered. And then he flew me, I went out to Minneapolis and I was in Paisley Park with coffee and cream. And it's so funny because I knew him for a long time. We had the same management for a long time as well. And so he was in London a lot. You know, he used to live here quite a lot. A lot of people didn't know that. Okay. He was actually here for many years. Mm. And so we used to hang out a lot. And, you know, he'd call me at 1 a.m. and I'd go and meet him in a club. And there'd be no one in the club, just me and him. And my sister, because I always brought my sister, because I was always a bit like, why does he want me around? He didn't say much, you know, but he didn't have to. Look, it's me, isn't it? I mean, I can talk for Britain. So it was like,
the opportunity to, probably.
Poor man, he's probably still trying now, yeah. Do you know, in the afterlife. But, you know, basically, I just would go and meet him, and he and I'd be in the club with my sister. We'd be listening to music. And, you know, up to the end, I hadn't seen him for about 3-4 years. And then I had a call that he was at Camden, and they said, Prince wants you to come down, and I went down to see him, and I said to his manager, because he didn't look the same, you know, he looked really thin, and he never looked thin, and he kept coming off and on the stage, and I said to his manager, he don't look right, is he all right? And he looked at me and smiled, but I didn't know that would be the last time.
Oh.
And a few months after that, he was gone.
Yes.
And it's just funny because
tragic.
It's the first place I met him, and the last place I saw him.
Oh.
Bizarre, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Well, those are all incredible stories.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very fortunate.
That'll be in a book one
then, day. Yeah. I'm just super, I am very, very, very grateful about the journey that I've had, but it has been tough.
So the last pillar of wellness is sleep. And maybe in your case, meditation. I don't know. Do you embrace this as well? Are you looking at your sleep? It must have been very hard to have regular sleep patterns, actually, with the business that you're in.
Yeah, we used to have to take melatonin, you know, because, you know, back in those days, we used to have the Concorde. If you remember the Concorde, we used to fly back. I'd do a show in New York, and I'd fly back to London for a show in London. Like, that's how we used to do it. It was nuts. It was so different now. That's what I'm saying. Now, you can do interviews in one room for the world. Mm. It's great. Yes. But back then, it wasn't like that. So they used to give us melatonin, which you can only get in the States. It's great, but you just have to take it at the right time. It's natural, but you have to take it at the right time so that you don't hit the jet lag, you know? Mm. I mean, these are the things we had to do because you were just knackered all the time. Mm. But the training is so good for sleep. Honestly, I sleep like a baby now. Mm. I really do. I still don't sleep, I mean, six hours and I'm good. But I'm not a big sleeper, but that's good for me.
That's good for you.
Oh, yeah.
And that feels great. Right for you.
Fabulous. You feel refreshed. I'm up, I'm ready. Dog, take the dog out. We're good to go.
Yeah. You mentioned, we talked about lockdown earlier, and I think you talked about physically how you cope with that. How did you cope mentally with that? And I think it's something that resonates with all of us. It's been such a tough year.
It's so hard.
Without exception. So how have you coped with
it? I never realised how free I was.
Mm.
I just didn't even acknowledge it. Because you just take it for granted. I will never take it for granted again. Let me tell you, that really taught me something. Mm. The good thing about lockdown for me was that I got to spend so much time with my daughter. Usually I'm flying her out somewhere and she's meeting me somewhere and we're flying all over the place. And holidays are our time to bond, usually. Mm. It's Christmas, it's Easter, and it's summer holidays. Mm. That's when she and I have our real mum and daughter time.
Yes.
Because other than that, we're flying in and out of each other. You know, I'm in and out.
Which isn't quality time, is it?
It isn't, but you make it work. You try to make it work. You know, you're on a plane. You know, I limited it, you know, like literally made it like, three times a month I travel, as opposed to like every week. I would make it like three times. I never leave for more than 6 days to make sure that I see her. You know, I do stuff like that.
Mm.
But this was great because this was like, we were together all the time. And we bonded.
Just reconnected.
It was amazing. Yeah. And also it's amazing when I think how we made it work the other way as well. Because it's like, how does she even know me? It's just, but you know, kids are so adaptable.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's the quality.
Yeah, we as parents worry about them, but actually they're
great. They adapt. Really adapt, okay? And she was fabulous. And we would just spend most of the time going to Hyde Park all the time with the dog. We'd have our 2 hours a day. And I would always take her for a drive just to have her not get stir crazy.
Mm.
And that's kind of how we dealt with it. I mean, we got stopped once. The police were like, you know, where are you going? We're just going to Hyde Park. Oh, okay then.
But that time with nothing else planned, that simple Crazy. Time together.
It really was powerful for me, honestly, because my other daughter who's married, they went to Bath because her husband's from Bath. And they stayed with their family down there. So it was just my youngest that was with me, Russia. Mm. And oh, I swear we just connect in a way now. So do you know what's really funny? Even now we still have our drives. We still do the nice. Drives, right?
Yeah. So there are positive things that have come out of this.
Absolutely.
Period.
And oh, just reflection. Mm. Reflection and just the drinking, putting the drinking down.
Yeah. You've achieved a lot.
Yeah, just probably would never have thought of those things or looked at those things. If this hadn't had, I would have just carried on, right? Mm, mm. But this has made you sit down and go, oh, you know, some of the choices I made, I was probably inebriated. And I probably might have not made that choice had I not been. You know, little things like that.
Judgment.
Not massive, but you know what I mean? Just because I am quite a controlled person, because you have to be in what I do. You can't be messy in my business. You have to be on time, because otherwise you don't get a good show. Do you know? So, but it was for me... The bonus of it was connecting with my daughter and just getting in touch with some of the things that are not so healthy.
Talking of lockdown, you appeared twice. I'm sure many more times than twice, but I remember two. One was a documentary, which was really powerful, The Gospel According to Misha. Mm-hmm. And I think you looked at the origins of a number of gospel songs.
That's
and
right.
Traced it back to the days of the slave trade through to gospel today. Mm-hmm. And I think coincidentally it aired around the time of, you know, George Floyd and the...
It was crazy that, because, it was around the same time the BLM protest had started.
Yes. And tell us about your experience of all of that and how it resonated. And how
well,
it
was... What was funny, Mario, was that we had filmed this documentary the Christmas before this whole BLM thing started. This was what was funny. Mm. So in this documentary, it's all about civil rights. It's got all of that in it. And that was before this even happened. And the BBC literally called up and said they were planning to put it out in September 2020. And then they went, because of the BLM situation, they said, we're going to put it out in May instead. And we were like, oh, so we had to, you know, it was a whole new plan. Everything changed. But it's just interesting how that serendipity, you know, like you couldn't time it.
No.
You couldn't plan it. But the BLM thing was a very incredible moment, I think, for the world. I think that everyone looked at that George Floyd situation and was just mortified at the footage, you know, because I remember before when it happened with Rodney King, because I was in LA then.
The LA riots.
Yeah, and I was there. I was in the riots. So I was living there then.
It was
then.
The late 80s.
Yeah, right. I was there. Yes. And I remember, so for me, it was like it was a return of that situation. But this was different than that, because for some reason, everyone was outraged. Every color, creed, human was just torn apart by that. And that's why this BLM thing was so impactful, I think, because it resonated. Everyone felt this. And it might have been because of lockdown. It might have been because of what was happening in the world with this. You know, we've never had this before as a species. We've never been locked down. Like, this is like a whole new thing. So everything resonated in a different way, I think. For me, it even though I'm a person of color, and I, of course, you know, my history is painful, you know. Equally, it's important for me to stipulate all the time that we are all human beings and that we're all in this together. And yet we must highlight all the disenfranchised, you know, races, creeds and whatever. But I do keep coming back to this thing that we are all human beings and we're all in it together. And it mustn't be that we have to be careful that we don't become too divided and make it all about race. Yeah. It's dangerous when that happens. So for me, it made me feel just more, like, this whole thing has made me feel like I want to be more of a humanitarian. I want us all to get together. Let's not make it too divisive, you know?
And the second time that I'm thinking of how you really made a very powerful impact was the Remembrance Sunday performance at the Royal Albert Hall.
That was so emotional that day.
And your performance of Amazing Grace,
yeah,
which was a real goosebumps moment.
Yeah, for me too. I mean, I was really choking back the tears, you know, because I was with all the soldiers. And what you didn't see on the telly was I was with them before the performance and they were all telling me all their stories of who they lost. And Some of them are really, really old, retired. And, I feel a bit emotional now. And they're just telling me all their stories. So when I went out there to sing Amazing Grace, that was tough because I was holding all their stories thinking, yes. Don't cry, Mish, just don't do it. And they're just wonderful people. Just these are great people that just get overlooked all the time. And I do quite a lot with them, you know, for Remembrance Day. They're just fantastic people. Mm. So for me, it's an honour to try to touch them with music.
Well, you delivered.
Yeah, bless.
Absolutely
yeah.
Delivered. What are you currently working on, Misha? What are you up to?
Right now, I'm doing album number 9. And and then I'm writing my second book at the moment, mm-hmm. which is really intense because there's kind of like a moment in the music industry.
I hope these stories you told today are going
there's to be some in. Of them are in there, yeah. And it's you know, it's just... The music industry is having a bit of a shake-up as well, a little bit like the movie industry has. Mm. We're kind of having our little Me Too moment right mm-hmm. now. You saw it with Britney Spears' yes. documentary. So it's quite interesting. My book, which I've been writing for the last 3 years, is really like about the female experience in the music industry from my perspective. Mm. And I talk about some of my friends too, who are well-known artists. It's very hard for females in our business. Mm. And the book is going to be really interesting. I'm doing that at the moment. So it's the book and the record.
You do like to keep busy, Misha. and now, well, yeah. Touch wood.
Yeah.
We're returning to some sort of normality. Yeah. Are there any live performances planned?
Yeah, we have a mini tour that's starting. I start at Ronnie Scott's next month. I do 4 shows in Ronnie Scott's next month. And then we do some touring all around the UK, which will be great. We're doing the Rye Jazz Festival. We're doing loads of shows. So just go on Misha Paris Soul mm-hmm. on Instagram and you'll see all the gigs that are coming
up. So you're making up for lost time.
Oh, we have to, because it's torture, you know, for musicians. I really feel it for all the musicians out there. I'm always sending them love and hugs because not being able to do what we do and just go on stage and just thrash and give it, you know, and having the audience there enjoying it, it's like, for us, that's a death. So, completely. Yeah.
All sectors have been really hit, but music has
been
my
gosh. I mean, I was ready to go to Covent Garden with the hat in the hand and, do you know, but the problem was it was completely empty. There was no one there. So I was like, I better go home then, do you know. So we're just trying to pack it all in, really, from, yes. you know, from the drought. And God willing, you know, we can get people back out having fun at shows again.
So to round off, Misha, and it's been wonderful talking to you as always. But what are the rules that you live by, and what's your parting shot? The advice you'd like to give listeners?
It's really, really important. I think is to understand how important it is to feel good in yourself, and that happens when you're just not toxic. It's the only way to say it, you know, because when you're not toxic, you're going to not be toxic emotionally. You're not going to be toxic with people around you. And the body is that way. It's like it doesn't work well when it's too many toxins in it. I find that for me, what works is I pray in the morning, and you don't have to do what I do. But, you know, in the morning, I get up at 6, I pray in the morning, and then I take the dog out and I come back and then I do the work, and then after the work I then come to the gym in the afternoon, and then I carry on with my work after that, and then I go home, cook, do my thing and chill out, and it's just nice. And then sometimes you go and you see your mates mm-hmm. and you have dinner with them, or wherever you go, or hang out with them. It's just quality of life. It doesn't have to be like opulent, you don't have to be wealthy, none of that. You just well-being is really about enjoying your moment and your life as it is and appreciating it. I just really feel grateful that my kids are normal. You know, in fact, for me, it's a blessing, because my industry, mostly when people have children in my industry, they don't turn out so well, you know, and I really thank God that my kids have turned out so well. It makes me feel good about my life, you know.
You're a role model for them.
You try to be, Mario. You know, we try, don't we? Yes. You know, you have to be honest with your kids. Yes. And I've always told them I'm going to get it wrong. That was a good start. So, you know.
Well, that's a lovely way to end. Misha, it's always a pleasure talking to you.
With you too.
The incredibly healthy, incredibly positive, and incredibly talented Misha Paris.
Thank you so much, darling. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Fab.
All right. Bye.
Thank you.